So that silicone chip can just get flipped somewhere and disasters happen. When gadgets betray us, Robert Vermosi continues next with your calls on Coast to Coast. This is Ian Punnett. Let's get back to the calls for Robert Vermosi. When gadgets betray us, we left it off with Leslie in Detroit on a wild card line on Coast to Coast. Leslie?
Yes, hello, gentlemen. Okay, I wanted to know, can an average person get your cell phone number and hook it up to try to find information, hook it up to a GPS system and follow you around? Can this be done?
Well, recently Apple had this problem where they had a file, and every time you synced your iPhone up to your computer, that file was carried over, and it had all your GPS location data on it. So someone could take that file and could learn about your whereabouts if they wanted to track you. I don't think the average person can actually do that. There are more sophisticated ways that someone can go through the phone registries and find your phone number and then start to track you that way, but that takes a little more effort. I don't think the average person can do it.
Okay. Okay, what about these HD TVs? Some people say that they have two-way vision, where they two-way audio.
Really? I haven't heard that. That's interesting.
Yeah, two ways where even if you cut the TV off, they still can view you and whoever, and they still have audio. Have you heard anything about like that?
No, I haven't, and largely because the digital TVs that I'm aware of don't have cameras or microphones.
They're also doing it through the cell phone, because look, I have a computer. I have a computer, right, and a little pocket computer. Okay, when I plugged it in, okay, I got cut off, right? Okay, when I plugged the charger into the wall and plugged it in the phone, it didn't work no more, and it was a personally charged battery, okay? And it just remotely cut the battery off by remote, and it was still charged. It was charged up, and it still cut it off. How is that possible? See, that's why I asked about the HDTV. It could be turned on, you know. It could be turned on remote, and you won't even know it.
Yeah, go ahead. You know? Robert, want to respond to that? And then I have a follow-up question.
I don't necessarily have a response on that.
Okay. But here, this would be one I'd be worried about. It's not so much a camera, but, you know, a lot of these, some of the technology that's coming out about to rate people's interaction with media, for example, the radio ratings are done now with, by and large, in most markets now, an electronic monitoring. And TV was done for a while. And somebody, and again, this is somebody told me, so take this with a grain of salt, some of the devices they were testing for TV ratings were measuring the number of people that were in the room. So they would be able to say, you have a household of three, watch this show. So it wasn't just that the show was on,
right,
but it could measure the number of people that were in the room watching it. Does that sound right?
At one point, my family was part of the Nielsen ratings, and what they did was they asked how many people were in the household. And if you had an electronic device, they asked how many people were in the household. I don't think they knew at any given moment that all the people in the household were watching the particular show that was on the TV at that moment in time. But they at least asked the question. I don't believe it was an electronic thing that was going on. I do want to mention, the caller brought up something very interesting, and that is there's a whole new area of data over power lines that came up at Black Hat and DEF CON this year. There were some presentations around that. And it's this idea that data can be transmitted over the household power line. And the problem with that is that it's not encrypted, it's not authenticated. There's a lot of potential there for data leakage. But a lot of devices are starting to take advantage of the fact that they don't have to have a wired connection to the Internet. They can just use the power line.
Right. Yeah, and then I'm really curious about this time that's coming where cell phones and other personal devices will be able to be charged just through the air.
And that is actually happening. There are right. Charging devices that you can buy that are universal. You just lay your phone on it and it charges it. Pretty cool.
Well, I'm talking about even through like a 4G device that they're talking about, and this is, I know this for that this is true if it isn't already being implemented in some sort of beta testing, where they can charge your phone in a given area that there's enough energy that's being put into this area that it would charge a phone, that it would have a receiver for that energy. And I think, okay, that also sounds like a recipe for some sort of abuse. I don't know what, but it kind of freaked me out a little bit. East of the Rockies, Wayne is in Halifax, Pennsylvania, for Robert Vimosi on Coast to Coast. Wayne?
How you doing, Eden? Well, I want to mention, if you buy internet off of somebody and it's illegal what they're doing, you know, like downloading CDs, and you didn't know it, and you brought it home, and you had it for a while, and you get a bill in the mail, like $700. You said, what happened? The guy who had it, you know, he did the downloading, and you didn't know it. But inside your computer is a hidden number, they said. They can trace you where that internet, the internet went to. And okay. They can send that right to the address.
And so can I understand? I just want to make sure I understand what you're saying here, Wayne. So you're saying, just give that, to rephrase that again for me so that I understand you.
Okay, there's a like a code inside your computer that you don't see it, but they can trace that computer wherever it goes.
Right. So and that
they can send it right to the person. That area where that person has internet.
Right. Okay. Now I understand better. Robert?
Yeah. Yes. And what the caller is talking about is something called Media Access Control MAC address. And every device has a MAC address. Every device, your television, your computer, your phone, they all have MAC addresses. And so, yes, it's part of the signal that's sent out over the internet. They can trace back and they can identify what device was communicating with the internet at the time that something happened, either download or whatever.
So that way they can verify that you have illegally downloaded information.
Yes, and banks also use that to identify when you do like online banking. They can say, we've seen this device before. We recognize this because, you know, of the signature that's on every device.
Right. And then what would be the dark side of that?
You can spoof it in certain cases. We talked before about pretending to be someone else. And this would be an example where if you obtained somebody else's MAC address, you could spoof it and you could go on and perform actions as that person's computer, but it's not really their computer. Some fraud is being initiated in that way.
It's kind of like that smartphone app. Speaking of spoofing, my older son spoofed my younger son by calling his cell phone, and on my younger son's cell phone, it appeared to be the number of his girlfriend that came up on his screen, but it was my older son using an iPhone app that allowed him to trigger another phone number to read on my son's phone. So then when he picked it up, it was my older kid pretending he was his brother's girlfriend.
Right. So it took it from the contact list. So it was a recognizable number. So he would pick up pretty quickly. Yeah.
And he used that as a camouflage to get into the phone. I thought that was way interesting. It's considered sort of a gag app, but that would be a way for a lot of people to get into your phone. If they were going to try and sell you on something, if they wanted to bypass the law that prevents them from direct marketing or from harassing you because you're not paying your bills.
Right. And as I started the show tonight, we're in a time of great experimentation. So somebody has figured out a way to do this. They've made an app. The app has made it through the App Store by Apple, and it's now available for people to use.
Right.
Whether now, we regulate it and whether we decide it's bad, we're going to have more use cases before, you know, some action is taken.
Well, I hope you're having a good time tonight, Robert, because this has been really interesting. And I know there's a lot of people that still want to get through to you. And like I said, your book is a page turner. Jack is in California on Coast to Coast, West of the Rockies, When Gadgets Betray Us. Jack?
Hi, Ian. Hi, Robert.
Hi.
I was originally going to ask about what the recipe might be to get rid of a RFID chip, but that was asked earlier, and what strength magnet you might need to avoid to swipe off the back of it. So I'd like to ask about smart meters. It seems to me they're basically a warrantless wiretap. They're giving up personal information. It can be patterned on when you're home or not. Police have actually used that information to file charges against people in California by going to Southern California Edison and probably Pacific Gas and Electric also. I'd like your take on that as far as the illegality of having a wiretap that's basically violating your Fourth Amendment right against illegal search and seizure and Fifth Amendment against giving up information about yourself, self-incrimination. Thank you.
I'm not a lawyer, so I can't speak to the legalities of all that, but you're absolutely correct. And it doesn't have to be the utility. I could sit in front of your house with a laptop, and I could read the signatures coming off of the smart meter because, as I said before, there's not a lot of authentication. It's not encrypted. And I could tell, like, when you're at home by your energy use or when you're not at home, or even in some cases, how many people are in the home by how, you know, the energy goes up or down. So there's new types of privacy that are being exposed with these smart meters. On the other side, we'll be able to regulate our energy ourselves. We'll be able to communicate with our utilities better. I mean, there are pros and cons to every technology, but you're absolutely correct. The privacy thing is very disturbing, and we'll just have to see what comes of that.
It's an unrelated issue, but I'm just going to say it bugged me, so I'm going to mention it. My energy utility, sent me a scolding letter. And it used shame as a device to point out how much more energy we were using as a household than the average household in our neighborhood. And they specified addresses of our neighbors and said, this address for this neighbor uses 32% less power than you do. This neighbor over here uses 17%. Let us work with you to get your energy usage down to your neighbor's level. And I thought, God, that is so, I know it's, you know, they say this is all to, you know, to help me save money in the long run and blah, 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 blah. But, you know, obviously I run a business out of the house here where we have a studio going that's sometimes going 24 hours a day, a radio studio, which you have to keep air conditioned, which you have to keep powered. And there's all sorts of things we're powering, which to me explains the disparity between me and my neighbors who don't also have radio studios in their house. But that, I just thought even just the audacity of that to get into a A-B comparison with neighbors and addresses, I thought that was really weird.
Well, before when the meter readers would go by once a month, it was pretty inaccurate. In retrospect, we're realizing that this wasn't a very good process. So now they've got meters that can read every 5 minutes what you're doing, and it get really accurate information. And that's good if we're trying to conserve energy. But as I pointed out before, new types of profiles can start to emerge about you and your neighbors and so forth. And we're just going to have to work through all of this new data that's being collected.
I just didn't like the fact they were all in my business. That's all I just didn't like. Johnny's in Texas. First time caller line on Coast to Coast. Johnny?
Hello, Ian and Robert. First time. It's a wonderful, wonderful show tonight. I'm going to be quick. I just wanted to ask a question to Robert and also you. I was watching the History Channel one night, and they had these things on about nanobots, you know, where they your bloodstream and they go
right,
yeah,
sure.
Nanobots,
yeah,
like
right.
Okay. And I was just wondering if there was any research more done on that, and did you know anything about that? And I'll hang up and get your question.
You know what? I think your answer. Yeah, I get it. I don't know. I don't remember nanobots coming up in the book.
I did not talk about nanobots in the book. At the moment, you know, there's not great concern around it because they're not being used, but at some point in time they will be used. They can be inserted into the body, and you know, it's possible that someone will go to Black Hat or DEF CON and present a paper on how they were able to hack the nanobots,
right? Or even nanobots being used as a way to fan out in a neighborhood. You know, there's nothing, I mean, if nanobots are, they can be all sorts of different things, and they can be you can have nanobot technology that's airborne, right? Where you can launch it. This has come up on with other guests have talked about this, that there's like a military app for nanobots where they can put nanobots over a large area, and they give all sorts of data readings coming back from a large area, or they can do it meteorologically where they can put it out over a large area and that information starts coming back slowly back about, like you could throw nanobots into a tornado, which is a little bit like the movie Twister,
right?
And you'd be able to get all sorts of computations going on. And so I wonder whether in that same sense, in a marketing sense, canvassing a neighborhood, if it's public, if there's no law against it, how long might it be until somebody might use something like that over a larger area to collect data, and you'd become totally invisible. It'd be just one step away from having an infrared reader for RFID chips or whatever, a computer reader for that.
Right. Might not seem related, but there was a talk at Black Hat and DEF CON that talked about these drones. We use the drones in the military for military operations. They were able to hook 8 different antenna, including a cell phone reader on there, and they were able to fly over an urban area and intercept various signals. So, shrink that down to a nanobot.
Yeah, well, that's exactly, I think it's exactly relevant. Robert is in Mississippi for Robert in California. When gadgets betray us. Robert?
Good night. How y'all doing tonight? I got a question to ask your guest. I had a friend that I ain't gonna say where he worked at, but you had a caller a while ago talking about the HDTVs, about having the cameras and the bugs and stuff.
Yeah, that seems far-fetched.
He mentioned to me that whenever they flipped the digital signal for a digital TV, when you had to go out and buy the digital box and all this, he said that the people he worked for would be able to sense who's all in your house and everything, and that if they seen that you were doing something wrong, that they had sent out this like a unmarked truck that would go in your neighborhood and they pinpoint your house with your digital receiver box and could tell what all you're doing in your house and everything. Have you heard anything about that?
Well, what I've heard is, the cable companies are very concerned about theft of services. And if they think that, more than you are watching their services and they should be billed for those services, they will send out a truck and they will look at your service and they can tell, if more than one party is watching a particular line. I think that might be what's being said there. And then also, there is this whole aspect of when you invite somebody into your home and they're doing a service call, I think in some cases, they're required to report any illegal activity that they might see.
I'll be honest with you and say that I remember a time in the 70s when some friends of mine and I had a bootleg, a pirate radio station. We got a little transmitter from like Radio Shack or something. I can't remember where we got it. We were broadcasting to the neighborhood on a frequency that we didn't own. We didn't petition. It was a low frequency transmitter. And at one point there was a truck that was coming through the area with an antenna on top. And, we were certain they were coming and looking for us. So we put it away and whatever. We went back to it at a later date. But what's interesting about that to me is that was even back in the 70s. Mm-hmm. So I can only imagine what the technology is like now. Probably something we only see about in spy movies, or we read about in When Gadgets Betray Us, the dark side of our infatuation with new technologies. Only a half hour left, and I think almost all the call open, all the lines are taken right now. We'll get you aligned if you can hang on and try again. We'll get you in on this conversation about the technology that's in your home, the technology you think is there to help you. No, it's not. On Coast to Coast, it's Ian Punnett. Well, let's go to your phone calls coming up next on Coast to Coast for Robert Vermosi. When gadgets betray us, you know what you can always trust is that at coasttocoastam.com, you can link up to a Coast Insider, and you can become a Coast Insider at any time. Listen to past Coast shows at your pleasure. You can go back years now into the Coast archives to catch a show. If you like a guest, you can go back and listen to their many appearances. Like in the first hour, we were talking with Galen Cook about D.B. Cooper, and you can go back to that very same show where he learned of the person who is now maybe prime suspect number one. If you missed the update, the D.B. Cooper suspect that got bantied about this week in the media turns out to be a no-go, according to the FBI, eliminated with the DNA. But if you missed that show, go back and catch the first hour through Coast Insider. Find out more at coasttocoastam.com. This is Ian Punnett. Ben is in Lancaster, Pennsylvania on Coast to Coast for Robert Ramosi, When Gadgets Betray Us. Ben?
Hey, Ian. Hey, Robert.
Hi.
I just got two quick questions for you. First being, is there any chance that someone could take control of my microwave and control it remotely? Second, have you seen the movie iRobot?
The movie iRobot?
Yeah.
You mean the Will Smith movie?
Oh, yes, that's the one.
Right. Yeah. It was loosely based on the Isaac Asimov Foundation series. No, I actually haven't seen the movie.
You'd enjoy that, actually. I think it'd be right. Actually, it's right in your wheelhouse here of what you're talking about. I think you should. But as to the microwave, that would have to be that the microwave would be online somehow, right?
That was my response exactly. You're catching on, Ian. If the device is connected to the internet, then there is a potential for hanky pank and certainly remote access from somewhere where you don't want. But if it's not connected to the internet, I wouldn't worry about the gadget.
Ray is in Citrus Springs, Florida, on Coast to Coast for Robert Ramosi. Ray?
Yeah, thanks, Ian, for taking my call. I can't remember, about 4 or 5 months ago, I heard somebody, I don't know if it was George, talking to that lady that does stuff about the RFID chips.
Yep, RFID,
Somebody called in and said if you put your driver's license that has the chip in it in the microwave for 5 seconds or so, it screws up the chip, and they scan it. They don't get nothing. I just wondered if that was true or if that's...
Right. That would not surprise me. But, Robert, have you tried to defeat the driver's license RFID chip?
I don't know. The individual states are coming up with the new RFID driver's license. I know with the passports that were issued, it was found that it would actually burn the passport. So while it would disable it, it would also alter the passport so that, you know, it would be recognizable that it was damaged in some way. So,
yeah, I think that's the same thing I remember hearing, if I remember the conversation correctly, about the RFID chips, is that you can disable it, but then later on you may have a problem for having a counterfeit driver's license.
There are those issues as well, yes. Why doesn't your card work where everybody else's works? You need to get that replaced, yes.
Yep.
That would certainly come up. So it's probably not a good idea to defeat it. With the passports in the United States, they actually put a shielding on it. And so as long as the cover is closed, you cannot read the passport remotely. But if the cover is open, it sort of defeats the cover. It leaks out nonetheless. The European ones don't necessarily have the covers. And so they're the ones that have been used in the security conferences that I've seen, where someone can read the contents of a passport without ever opening it or seeing the individual.
Not to mention the wallets and the passport holders that are expressly...
Right.
Marketed to defeat RFID reading.
Right.
And that's like you can get that like a Brookstone. I mean, you can get that everywhere.
Yep.
Right. Let's go to Robin in Oakland on Coast to Coast. Robin?
Well, hi, Ian. Hi, Robert.
Hi.
I think we've been in a war a little bit too long when you talk about the book title and I keep hearing General Betrayus.
When Gadgets, General Betrayus.
Yes,
yeah, exactly.
General Betrayus.
I can hear that.
This is bad. Robert, thank you so much for doing this for us. I'm on a hardline phone, but I'm on a combined service thing. My roommates wanted hot and cold running, high speed everything. Bottom line is I do all of my business and banking and all of that over the phone. How often should I be changing the code number on my banking card?
Yeah.
You're talking
this
about
is
your PIN number?
Yep.
Okay. PIN, I actually left this out of the book. I had a whole digression on PIN numbers. They've been around for 40 years, particularly with ATMs. The ATM machine's been around for 40 years. And PINs are very robust. there's only 4 digits in the United States, and other countries there's 6. Only those few digits separate you from, you know, bad things. And it's robust. It's held up. It's very hard to defeat those PIN numbers. So I wouldn't worry too much about changing your ATM PIN. Passwords in general, however, it's a good idea to change them fairly often. Usually every 90 days or so is a good recommendation.
I can't think of enough of them. You know, that's part of my problem is I have so many things that I have to change.
Right.
And I have a couple. I mean, I rotate a couple, but I only have a set number of IDs that I rotate. But by doing that, I mean, not everything's on the same ID number. I have to go along with that for a password.
Right.
But I just couldn't go back and redo every 90 days and redo everything.
I'll give you a simple trick. I think I mentioned it in the book at some point. Somebody did research on passwords that had been hacked from a gaming site. And what they found was, in general, people have, like, alpha characters, A, B, C, D, E, F, G. They don't necessarily have numbers, so put numbers in there. But an even smaller percentage use special characters, using the shift key and a number and putting, like, a pound symbol or something. That differentiates your password from everybody else's better than anything else I can think of. So if you don't rotate them very often, at least make them very complex to begin with.
Well, here's what I have. I have 2 uppercase, 4 numbers, 2 lowercase.
Okay.
And letters. And I think that seems like it's held up okay.
It's probably held up for you okay. There is a program on the internet called John the Ripper. And what it does is it goes through and it can look for what you just read to me very generically. It could look for all examples of that in what they call a brute force attack. And in a matter of minutes could come up with all the permutations, one of which is probably what you're using. So that's why I'm saying throw an extra special character in there, and that'll differentiate you from everybody else.
Then I probably shouldn't have said that. Then I probably shouldn't have said that to you.
Well, you didn't give me enough to do that, but
you scare me. You scare me. Somebody in the audience could. I should not have said that. Michael is in Southlake, Texas, on Coast to Coast. Michael?
Hey, I've been using this program called Tor to make my internet traffic anonymous or untraceable.
Mm-hmm.
Now, as I understand it, Tor was developed by the U.S. Navy or U.S. government entity. What are the chances that Tor is actually just a program meant to track people who want to be untraceable?
Wow. I can't speak to that, but I have used Tor. It's the Onion router, and what it does is I'm sitting at one IP address, and it tunnels through various other IP addresses, so I might actually come out in a foreign country. And so when the website sees my address, it might be from Germany or somewhere else, and that gives me some anonymity.
Interesting. Roderick is in Spokane on Coast to Coast. Roderick?
Hey, Ian. I'm just going to say I love your Twitter photo. It is adorable.
My son, yeah, that's right, the Twitter photo, thank you. Yeah, that's Jackula the vampire dog. That's my dog right there.
And I'm one of your callers that's, you know, younger than the internet, so I think
it's hilarious. That's true. That's great.
So I was like, Robert, just tell him the IP address or something. I don't know.
Right.
But I was calling to ask Robert, you know, with the, you know, Facebook, you can sign up with, you know, if you want to go to like crack.com, call your website, you can sign up with Facebook. You know, and you can do all these things, and, you know, you mentioned a coaxial. And I was wondering, you know, if somebody just hacked Facebook, you know, it's probably impenetrable-ish. Not really, but I was just wondering, if, you know.
The danger is in the ish,
yes.
Right?
Like, how bad would it be? And also, my second statement is Bitcoins, you know, the anonymity.
Yes.
Do you think that people will start adopting that more frequently as time goes on?
You're talking about Bitcoins?
Bitcoin.
Okay, go ahead.
Bitcoin. It's a way to anonymously contribute money on the internet. It's sort of like PayPal with anonymity. I don't know if that's going to take off. It's still, I think, too early to see that. As for Facebook, a number, not just Facebook, but other companies as well, want to be a single sign-on so that you put all your trust in a particular site, and when you log on to that site, you can then log on to other sites because they'll say, oh, Facebook recognized you, therefore, whatever. I would draw the line at banking, personally. I don't want my bank to accept my Facebook logon as accepting that I am who I am. It would be pretty bad if it got to that. There is a proposal that just came out from the U.S. government called the Federated ID proposal, where they would have, like, your phone company would authenticate you, and you could use that and your Google and your Facebook as you choose. And so you wouldn't be giving a lot of information out. You wouldn't have to fill out all these registration forms. You could go to a website, and you could say, Google authenticates me, so I can use your site. And they will say, yes, Google authenticates. You know, it's proven that you are who you are. So there's a potential upside to these systems, but we're still sort of figuring them out.
First-time caller line, Skip, is in Anaheim, California, on Coast to Coast. Skip?
Yeah, hi. How you doing? Okay. I was basically every product has usually a guarantee, and you have to reproduce it. Things go bad, and what I'm trying to say is you have to repair things all the time, no matter what product it is, unless you had a perpetual motor or something, you know, then you wouldn't be betrayed. But theoretically, you know, any vehicle, you have to take it back and get it fixed. It just won't just run forever, and you have to reproduce. That's why we have dumps, because things get worn out and you have to buy more. And just any gadget, theoretically, you know, when you warranties, guarantees, you have to still get things fixed. And that's a betrayal because they don't last forever. And okay. It's not like a conspiracy or anything, but it's just things wear out, and you have to always reproduce what you buy. You have to fix it later, or you have to buy something else, any product.
Okay. I'm not sure how that pertains to the subject, but Robert, jump in.
Yeah, I guess we've gotten good at taking care of our PCs and our desktop computers. You know, we update with the latest updates. We have antivirus and so forth. We just need to extend that over. I mean, how many times have you reflashed the firmware on your digital TV because there's a later and greater and more secure firmware out there? We're not thinking in those terms yet, and so we don't necessarily have to throw things out. We can actually improve the gadgets that we have if we just learn to take care of them. And that requires the consumer taking on a little more action than we're currently doing right now. We just sort of turn on our gadgets and accept them for what they are. And I'm saying, no, we should be a little more attentive to our various gadgets, particularly the ones that we put our personal information on.
You know, I just have that personal philosophy with everybody, though. So I extend it to my gadgets. I just try to take my gadgets like my people as they are. I try not to judge them. I try not to say you're insufficient. I try not to say I will like you if you, you know, I try to just take the good and the bad. But it's an interesting thought on the televisions, too, or some of the other technologies where there really isn't a way to upgrade them like you could with a computer by adding more memory. It's either they're all, you know, sort of the self-contained, you know, kind of plastic sealed unit. And that, I think that would be an interesting possibility to be able to upgrade something with components over time, but we really haven't been thinking like that.
No, and actually your digital TV probably has the mechanism to do that. You just have to dig down in the configuration and have it say, is there an update for my firmware, and then download it off the internet.
If you had your TV connected to the internet.
Correct.
Right. Let me grab, let's see, is it Michelle, who's from Alberta on there? I don't have a name on my screen. I just have Alberta. Wade is in Alberta on Coast to Coast for Robert Vermosi.
Hi there.
Hi.
Hey.
I got a problem with the PC. It keeps losing the internet, but it's still connected. It's the DNS server that's not responding. What the heck would that be? Would it be somebody messing with it, or
just a problem.
Yeah,
just bad luck.
It could be the server that you're trying to connect to is flaky or hard to reach from where you are. There are alternative DNS servers. There's a company called OpenDNS. You can look them up on the internet, and you can just change who your DNS server is on your computer, and it'll go through OpenDNS instead. What DNS does is domain name server. When you type in google.com, it translates it into its numerical address on the internet. We can't remember the numerical addresses. The DNS service does that for us.
Let me ask you, what are signs that you may be compromised? The security on your computer might be compromised.
Well, yes, usually a slowness in performance. And I'll carry that over to, like, your phone. If your phone has been compromised with a virus, you might see battery usage, unexplainable battery usage. That could be that your processors are chewing up energy, doing other things than what you wanted it to do. So I would look for a sluggishness in the device. That's often an indicator that something's going on that you may not want.
Mike is in Louisiana on Coast to Coast. Mike?
Yes. I was in a job in a government facility where they had switched to going to RFIDs on the physical IDs that everybody wore.
Mm-hmm.
And they were using them as part of the logon sequence for the terminals. Okay.
Right.
And around the same time, IBM was launching all these laptops with biometrics. And my question was, they were saying that they were doing that because pretty soon everybody was going to be doing that. And I was just wondering, how far along are they in that world? I mean, you were saying how biometrics aren't very reliable. Right. And given it, the government facilities were doing this, you know.
Right. Well,
that brings into question the security of a government facility, I guess.
Right. Well, I'll just talk generally. The laptop computers, the pad that you use, the finger pad that you use, can receive electrical signals from your finger. And I know Windows 7 has the capability to allow a biometric log on. So in terms of identifying you to your laptop computer, I think biometrics is fine. It can work. In terms of you identifying to a larger network, that's where I draw the line. Don't think that biometrics by itself works.
So much interesting material, and we didn't even get to all of it, I promise you. When gadgets betray us, the dark side of our infatuation with new technologies, or as some people heard that, when gadgets generally betray us. Robert Vimosi, very interesting guy. Thank you so much for all the time and all the questions. And if you don't mind, sometime we may have to follow up with you during a news segment here, because so much comes out seemingly every week about technology and security. Is that all right if we call you back sometime?
Oh, that's fine. I really enjoyed tonight's show. Thank you for having me on.
Oh, you're just terrific. Thank you. And thank you, everybody, too, for calling in. We almost got everybody on. Coming up on Sunday night, Matthew Alper is back. Paranormal and the Brain, Matthew Alper, coming up tomorrow night. In the meantime, I'll be talking to you about what's coming up next week. We'll be tweeting it, and on the Facebook page, we're shutting down the profile page, moving to a fan page coming up. So by all means, please friend me over there, and we'll be in touch. Deus Tiamat, and I do too.